T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
And then he also puts out a calendar that has all these paranormal events. I help him with that. But his book is about to come out. So
I'll make Cryptid Cartoons. Cryptid Cartoons. What's his name?
He goes by his artist name, which is Klaus or Dirty Filth is another name he goes by.
Dirty Filth. Okay. Okay, I'll look that up. That looks really interesting.
He did this wonderful cartoon of Brandon Fugel and Skinwalker Ranch and sent it to him. And then he got a nice big like thank you check in return for it.
Oh.
I think that, you know, his artwork's popping up kind of all over the place. So it's just kind of fun to follow him.
Yeah, I'll check him out. That's really cool.
Nice.
I have...
Grant's ready to start.
Ready. Ready. I've got something in my eye here. What's going on? Here we go.
Might as well go live on Facebook here, too.
Live.
Never know who's going to pop in. You never know.
That's true. I didn't announce it, so we'll just see who trickles in. I'll find us on Facebook so I can chat. Okay. But
very cool.
Do we need to do a recap with Chase on how we know him, or are we going to skip all that and let people find out for themselves?
No, we'll get everybody to introduce themselves. I'll give you a little bit of a start here, and then we can get into the past and the future. That sounds exciting.
I'm excited. Yeah,
there you go.
You guys know I've been we'll get into it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start. Yeah. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. And if you're in the here and now, the present moment, you're welcome as well. I have a guest that we've had a number of times. We've done a number of shows together. Chase Williams, a friend of mine, who actually is part of a documentary that is about to come out called The Memo. And it was actually Chase who played a large part in getting this thing out. We won't get into that story today. Maybe we will. But I've known Chase. Chase is an experiencer. He collects experiencer art. And anybody who has an experiencer art can contact me, or we'll put Chase's stuff in the notes. And you can contact him if you're an experiencer and you do art. He collects it. He told me this morning he's got 70 different prints. But we're not going to talk about that today. And I'm joined by Nicole Sackett, who helps me quite a bit on a number of different things. We've co-authored a book together on triangles. Good morning, Nicole, and welcome to Chase.
Hi, Grant. Hi, Chase. It's always a pleasure to see both of you.
How long does this go back, Chase? I remember you used to phone me. You'd phone me in the morning, and you'd have different things that you were looking at. I think you were after the Joe Firmage thing. You were following that, I think, at one point. And so we had a lot of conversations by phone. How long have we been in contact?
Yeah, I think maybe since 2018 or 2019. It's been five or 6 years.
Yeah. And yeah. As I mentioned, you had a big part in this this memo thing that a documentary will be coming out on. This has been read into the Congress. and people always got excited about, and I still haven't really read the whole thing. So, and I don't know if you know, Chase, I mean, after you helped me get this thing out, I found out that a pile of people had this memo. They had it for 10 years and they sat on it and didn't do anything with it, which kind of infuriated me. It's like, you know, we put ourselves out there to take the ridicule, well, and these people are hiding in the background.
One person didn't even know they had it because it was mixed in with a bunch of stuff that they were also sent. So you just said you haven't read it all. Like, imagine if you had, like,
I just wasn't interested.
And it's only 11, you know, it could have taken you 20 years to get to the bottom. So I can understand that, but I would have pulled it out first thing, honestly. If I heard whispers about it, I would have been like, what? But so I think everybody knows what memo we're whispering and talking about. So that could be our cliffhanger for now on that. More to come. But
yeah,
I think that is an interesting segue, though, because Chase, you've gone on in your creativeness and wanting to help drive, you know, the transparency behind the phenomenon, and you've created Paradox, which I would like you tell us a little bit about Paradox, because I'll just be funny. And I know Grant doesn't understand it at all. So tell us all about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of leading into that, you know, like Grant said, you know, I reached out to Grant and met you, Nicole, through that effort, 5 or 6 years ago. And the reason I did that is because I had this really impactful CE5 experience of my own, in which lights appeared in the sky and were answering a question in my head, and telepathy was involved. And I questioned the nature of consciousness and non-locality and all the things that you guys so often talk about. And so I wanted to speak to somebody in ufology that's been looking at this stuff for a while and go, hey, like, I want to, you know, I need somebody to talk to. So that was why I initially reached out. And over the past 5 years, I've had a bunch of different other experiences, really what I consider to be really significant. You know, things that could be classified as poltergeist activity or apports, which Grant has talked about extensively, or ghost encounters, out of body experiences. I've had the life review. I've had the classic alien abduction experience. And even growing up, you know, when I was 10 and 15, I had some really significant close encounters with what seemed to be craft. It was certainly work craft, but, you know, so
that's right.
So that all that led into this. So Paradox, which if anyone's interested, you can go to discoverparadox.com. It's P-A-R-A-D-O-C-S. It's a combination of paranormal and docs, as in documentation. So discoverparadox.com. Right now, it's just a landing page. It's, if you're interested in what I'm doing here, you can sign up for early access to the project once it goes live, and also receive project updates via email. And what it is, it's an attempt to build the world's largest aggregated database of phenomenon-related material, and also provide a research platform to the community. So when I say the largest database, look, if you get on Google, you guys know better than the majority. Get on Google, there's MUFON database, New Fork database, INIDS database. There's some really... Arrowid.org is a phenomenal repository of information about different types of experiences, but there's not one single repository or database that exists for all of this phenomenon-related content, and there's so much. And aside from the kind of formal databases that exist, like MUFON and New Fork, you know, first of all, New Fork and MUFON aren't really doing anything with that data. It just sits there in a spreadsheet. New Fork has about 147,000 reports that you can download right now. And a lot of those reports out of the 147,000 don't add a lot of value. There's a lot that are clearly, you know, reports that people are just having fun. They put in. Some are really light when it comes to the details. I saw a craft and it happened in Texas. That doesn't really add much value to from a research perspective. So, you know, from my seat, NewFork and MUFON and a lot of these other databases, and they're not really databases, but I'm going to call them databases, have this data, and they're not really doing anything with it. And if Grant, you know, as a researcher, or if you, Nicole, want to go out and utilize, you know, a single repository to pull in all the UFO sightings, all the alien abduction reports, if you want to map all the geolocation information that's out there, we know that there are maps that are available online, but they leave a lot to be desired. They're only looking at one data set. They're not going back into historical accounts, antiquity, and they're not incorporating a lot of the published work that's in physical media only versus what's available online. The other aspect to this is there are millions and millions of comments online in forums like Reddit and 4chan and elsewhere where people talk about their experiences and they don't talk about them anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that content is freely accessible. It's not restricted by privacy restrictions or, you know, copyright issues. So this Project Paradox, discoverparadox.com, is an attempt to aggregate all of that. Now, I've been working on this for about 2 months, and I've collected about 7 million reports so far. And I'm putting them into a database. I'm normalizing it. I'm standardizing it. I'm training a large language model, artificial intelligence, on all this information. And the concept is when the project launches and this site evolves and transitions into something that you can actually log into, you'll have a user database. You'll be able to search through everything in the database, right, via keyword. And the LLM, the AI, will be able to help you understand the correlations between the data sets. It'll be able to help you better find the connections. You know, we know that there are similarities between near-death experiences and DMT experiences and alien abduction accounts. But it would be really helpful if you could visually see those connections, right, and dive into the material. So this is an attempt to really provide this massive database to the public.
I will say that a lot of these new sites that are coming out are UFO centric. They don't include these crossovers that Grant he's writing a book on crossovers. Imagine that.
Yeah. Like, that's my next question. Like, I can't believe what's going on here.
It is so hard to acquire this data. You can go in, like, Grant, what's the university in California that has the big Aport collection?
Stanford,
yeah. Manitoba. Like, you can find this information, but it's so hard to pull it together for yourself, even when you're interested in it. Like, you can't just go online and say, give me all these cases. And your thought of pulling, I guess the good way to put it is testimonials, you know, from places like Reddit or other social media outlets, that's kind of brilliant in and of itself, because so many people don't report. And it's not that MUFON or NewFork or all the other ones you can report to don't have good intentions, I guess, but there isn't really like a crossover or a follow-up. It is just sort of dump this information on them. The high strangeness is always what's lacking in those reporting systems, I think. You know, if you have an event and then weeks later your high strangeness starts to flare up, there's not a way to really go back and fill in those blanks or get that data out there. So I'm so excited for this. Can I ask maybe a nosy question? Since
you
bring up, like, you know, we met each other about 5 years ago now. I know, like, where you were working or what you were affiliated with maybe a year or two before that as well, like with TTSA. Was the inception or the thought process of this in TTSA at all? Because we heard about an app that they were going to launch, or, you know, that maybe somebody else split from TTSA and was going on to do, but we never heard anything of that. Was there anything? Does Paradox have anything to do with that? Is what I
no, And so I almost went to work for To the Stars, working with Tom and Steve and Lou. You know, I'm fairly certain I told you guys I went to Encinitas and they wanted me to join because of my AI background to help develop that app. Essentially, it was going to be an app on the web, but mostly on smartphones, Apple and Android app, in which people could catalog UFOs in the sky, compare their photographs and their geolocation information with known flight records, atmospheric anomalies, that kind of stuff. It wasn't what I had in mind when I was flying to Encinitas the way that it was described to me when I was there. So I kind of lost interest and they also wanted me to move to Southern California, and I'm not a fan of Southern California. I like Northern California, but so you know that was before this. The inception for this, Nicole, happened 2 or 3 months ago, and really for the past 5 years, I've been trying to figure out what to do because I want to work with this material. I want to research this. This is all I want to do every day. Aside from, you know, spending time with friends and family, this is what I want to do. And so over the past 5 years, I've really been struggling with how to integrate my experiences and prioritize this because, I mean, you guys know this is like, what else is there that is a higher priority in focusing on than these experiences that people have
Do
and
you
what
feel
they've.
like this is part of your experience or mission? You know, we all feel like we get called to do something or pulled, you know, in the direction where we feel like we can help. Do you feel like this is part of your experience?
I think so. You know, I haven't had any messages or communication or any of, you know, what I would consider to be paranormal experiences that were like, you need to build a database, build it and they will come kind of thing. But I, you know, I thought I found myself working with a market research organization on a big project because my background is in technology and stuff. And so I'm supporting this organization and I noticed they have a dashboard and they're kind of doing this with market research reports. So an organization like Apple, for instance, could pay a monthly fee. And of course, they charge a lot of money for this. That's not what I have in mind. But you know, an organization like Apple can pay a monthly fee and they can log into this dashboard and get all this market intelligence and have access to, you know, how microchips are made and look at electron microscope images of how well solders are done on integrated circuits and stuff like that. And I thought, you know, we really need something like this, but for the phenomenon, because like you said, there are a lot of websites that are focused on UFOs or just focused on cryptids, Bigfoot, just focused on ghost sightings, right? But it's all segmented. And the term siloed is it comes up in ufology a lot, but it's applicable here too. It's all kind of siloed, and there aren't many researchers that I'm aware of that really are bringing attention to the fact that everything does appear to be connected. Grant is one of them. You know, there are others out there that talk about it, of course, but there isn't a research platform or a database that can really help facilitate and move that conversation forward, you know. So yeah, that's my hope. I think so. I
Wow.
think it's a part of I think I finally figured out what I need to do.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing it, yeah.
This just blows me away. You know I'm doing a book on this, right? Exactly what you're doing.
No, I have no idea.
And you mentioned this is the biggest story. The book is called The Super Bowl. And
Oh, yeah.
it's the idea that it's all the same thing. It's all and I've got a lot of your cases in the book. For example, the abduction experience, DMT.
Yeah.
And people don't realize this. You say, well, you know, it's gray aliens and stuff, and it's like, well, no, it comes in other phenomena and the idea of having the idea of knowing everything. So I list the cases, shared death, near-death experiences, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, all this kind of stuff, where the same
Oh,
story
yeah.
keeps coming up all the time. And that's what you mentioned, this thing with the silos. Is that people get into these little the stovepiping things where they're into one little phenomena and they think this explains everything and they don't realize that story is all over the place. And so you're doing, maybe we'll have to do a second book. You can, I'll send you the book and you can take a look at it. And
basically, oh yeah, that'd be great.
It goes through the whole thing. It's basically done, except it looked like it's going to end up being two books because there's just so many stories. But yeah, that was what I realized is that, and you mentioned, maybe you can elaborate on the fact that once you have a phenomena, once you have an experience, that you have this CE5 type encounter, then everything else starts happening. The ghosts, I remember asking Yvonne Smith one time, I said, Yvonne, how many abductees have like paranormal events happened in her life? She starts laughing. She goes, oh, like 99%. And people don't realize this, that once you have the one phenomena, it seems to open the veil and all this other stuff, the black, the shadow people, even a fellow that Nicole and I are working with on a documentary called The Aviary. And then he got going on this thing and he got all excited and suddenly he had a black helicopter. And he thought it was the government trying to shut him down. I said, no, I don't think it's a black helicopter. And then I looked on his film and sure enough, there seems to be at one point a UFO in with the black helicopter. And you realize it sort of drags in everything. And I'm just fascinated with the fact that you're basically got the data, because that's what I was trying to do. I'm working out of all the stuff out of my head. And you've actually got it all sort of documented, because I knew there was these connections between this and that and the idea that everything is perfect. I remember I did interviews with four different people from different, whether it's psychedelics or whether it was float tanks or whether it was near-death experience, all had the experience where they were told everything is absolutely perfect. Everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. And they went, what? They couldn't believe this, that they wouldn't tell their families that they'd had this experience. And so I think it's fascinating what you're doing, because the critical point is that people got to realize it's probably all the same thing. It's consciousness. It's whatever different vibration or whatever. And it comes as an alien. It comes as something else. And your background, that you're part of the experience, it's because people figure that it's something outside happening to us. And as Brandon Fugel said, when people go on the ranch, he warns them, remember, this is reflective. That you are part, or John Wheeler said, there is no out there. This is it's a participatory universe and you're part of the experience. Yeah. And I think that's what your thing will bring out. I'm just fascinated that
you're doing this. That's the other part of it. You know, that the interdisciplinary studies and the separation between the research that individuals like yourself and others in the community are doing and have done is seen by a lot of academics as separate from, or maybe not as valuable, at least from my perspective. I know there are academics out there, you know, that are working at universities or graduate students that are writing papers that are peer reviewed that do focus on near death experiences and telepathy and ESP and even the alien abduction phenomenon. But it seems as if the tone, the sentiment, generally speaking, is, you know, from their perspective, from that at formal academic perspective, is that a lot of this is still considered nonsense. And that's really unfortunate, because there are some phenomenal academic, formal, peer-reviewed papers out there that clearly show you that it's not nonsense, that there's a lot of legitimacy here. You know, and even the big announcement, so 2022, the three Nobel laureates, you know, they got the Nobel Prize for proving that local realism is false, right? And the bottom line there is literally telling you that we're accepting, mainstream science is accepting this theory that when you're not observing something in space-time, when something in space-time does not have an observer, it doesn't exist. It exists as a probability. And that tends to suggest to me that, well, this idea that consciousness is fundamental is pretty significant. Like we should really focus on this. So the other part of paradox, which again, you can go to discoverparadox.com, paradocs.com, and just sign up for updates. It's not live yet. But the other part is integrating all the academic papers, right? All the ion stuff, everything that we're familiar with, and then some, right? And the hope is that this is gonna grow. The community is gonna see value in this, and I'll be able to hire a dedicated database engineer and desk researchers, and we'll just continually pull stuff in. We'll go out to individuals that have the private collections and you know, if we get there okay and there aren't concerns with copyright infringement, we'll scan everything into the large language model, we'll integrate it into the database, because there are, there's a massive amount of data. And you know, even the comments out there that just get lost in the noise, there's so much online, it's hard to keep track of, you know, and even if you have a physical library at home, it's hard to keep, it's like you said, you know, with the memo, the guy didn't even know he had it.
Like, yeah. You know. That was a girl, but yeah.
A gal, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
And the interdisciplinary thing is, we still haven't got there yet, because I remember, I think I got sort of the idea when I worked at a university for 40 years or 37 right. years. And yeah. I wasn't a professor, but I had the, I was like, I was a bartender for a number of years when I first got there. And I realized that these guys were very, very specialized. So if you're doing a PhD, it's on one little aspect of one part of a thing. And that these guys, I had, my office was in the chemistry building, and I knew that the chemistry guys never went to the biology building. They never went to the engineering building was on the other side of campus. And, yeah. and they had their own little world. And I remember I would have three deans that used to talk to me about UFOs when I was bartending early on. And the one used to argue with me, he was a plant scientist. And I remember I at one point I said, like, what? You're a plant scientist. What the hell do you know about UFOs? And he went, nothing. And that was the whole thing. People realize, they think that because you've got a PhD that you know everything, and you don't. You get more specialized as you go along. So I think this is a breakthrough, because even the UFO community is doing the same thing. You know that IONS will not do UFOs. They will not touch the subject, because they say that they're going to lose all their funding if they get into this wacko UFO. And the UFO people say, yesterday I did an interview with a channeler, and they go, we're not going in. That's wacko stuff. I mean, we're not going in there. And you get this, everybody's in their little silo and they're going. So this may be the thing that people need, is you're making the same point I'm making, is that it's probably all going to be the same thing. And there's these interrelated things. And if you realize it's interrelated, you're going to make a step ahead, and you're going to start to see it in the proper perspective.
That's it. Yeah. And one of the initial things that I did, and I'm referencing the schema because it's too much for me to remember off the top of my head, but I had to design the database schema. What kind of information is going to initially be put into the database? So from the phenomenon, and that's O-N instead of O-N instead of N-A, not phenomenon, right? So encompassing all of the various phenomena, you know, I've got anomalous and unexplained phenomenon, which includes UFOs, aliens, NHIs, cryptids, ghosts, hauntings, even other unexplained phenomenon like missing 411 stuff, you know, and other unexplained sounds or lights that aren't considered UFOs or UAP. Induced experiences, so anything from substance-induced experiences, and we talk about DMT, LSD, psilocybin, stuff like that. Even stimulants, caffeine, nicotine, depressants, alcohol, sedatives, technique-induced, so hypnosis, sensory deprivation, breath work, cultural and ritualistic practices, shamanic journeys, vision quests, religious rituals, even technological interventions, brain-machine interfaces, virtual reality, you're familiar with the God ring or whatever it's called that goes around your head that induces things with an electromagnetic.
I love that thing, field. The Shakti God helmet.
Right. Yes. God helmet, right. And then natural experiences. So, you know, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, even psychological experiences, dreams, memories, cognitive biases, right? All this stuff, theories of consciousness, states of consciousness, perceptual anomalies, extrasensory perception, comparative religion and mythology, occultism. So I think it's, and that's, that's just scraping the surface.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's still not everything, but I think it's a good starting place, because you are going to see these similarities, you know, and Grant, you know, just with ufology alone, you've got modern ufology, and then you've got the airships of 1860 to 1896 or whatever. And then before that, you've got sightings reported all the way back into ancient antiquity. And it becomes really difficult to research just that, just with the fact that the etymological variables, the language that's used to describe these experiences has changed over the last 100, 500, 1,000, 2,000 years. So if you integrate the AI and you tell the AI, let's look at this from an etymological perspective, Let's try to find accounts that match this, that are this, that are similar, but maybe use different language. The AI can look at 10,000 accounts in 30 seconds and go, yeah, there's some similarities. A human can't do that. And you can check it. You can make sure that, you know, you can check its work. But that's really what I'm excited by, because you'll have this kind of AI assistant on the dashboard to help you organize your own personal research. And you don't have to go into the database and look at everything. If you're only interested in ghosts and out-of-body experiences, and you can just focus on that and kind of, you know, do that. The other aspect is collaborative workspaces on this. So you'll be able to go in with groups. So if the three of us wanted to join a collaborative workspace and work on a project for a new book, we could pull in all this research and organize it the way we want and come up, you know, with some ideation, or if it was outlining a podcast or for a formal academic paper. So, I'm really excited.
A question for you. Have you spoken to Jacques Ballet? Because he put together the 11 databases for the OSAP. Have you talked to him about this?
I have not spoken to Jacques. I've never spoken to Jacques. I'd love to.
I'm going to send this to Jacques. I think Jacques would be fascinated in this.
Yeah, what's that database called? What are the French ones too? There's Gaipan and another.
Oh, yeah.
They don't really encompass a lot of the high strangeness. But then, of course, the Archives of the Impossible at Rice University is trying to amass a big archive from interesting people, but they seem to be a little bit.
Is that managed by Kripal, Jeffrey?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's basically people's collections, which, I mean, I don't go to archives anymore. Yeah. I mean, nobody goes to archives. If you want to see Jacques Ballet's archives, material.
None of these archives I know about have a learning language model set.
Yeah, that's what you need because that was one of the books I intended to write down the road, was called 8.25 seconds. And that's the idea that if you take the attention span of a two-year-old, it's between 4 and 6 minutes. And if you take a look at the attention span of someone on the internet, it's 8.25 seconds. Yeah. And that's what you need is this push button thing where you can go quickly and the AI is doing the work, because people are just aren't going to go through the work to do that kind of reading and gather that material. So this is innovative. I mean, this is something I think that's going to change everything. I mean, in terms of, because that's, I think, what a lot of the ufology world is missing. Even now, they're still chasing the crash flying saucers and disclosure and stuff like that. And it's just one little aspect. And it's like, what do you do when you catch the car? Like, what are you going to do when they say, oh, this thing's for real? Then what do you do? And people have no clue. The answer is way bigger than even Jim Semivan said, because you've got bodies and crafts doesn't mean you know what's going on. And that's where I think you hit the thing. And it's just so weird that you're doing the same thing I'm doing, except I'm just doing
it. I had no idea.
My head that I've gathered in my head. And I realized that, you know, aliens are taking people to the spirit world and you get this kind of stuff and you go, I heard that story before. Or the crystal, you know, the idea that where Richard Doty says, you know, the most important thing he saw was the crystal. The aliens have this crystal. And then the Life Between Life, Michael Newton stuff. And they're looking at crystals in the book, the three-dimensional crystals. And then this guy says he's in the spirit world with the alien. And his mother shows him these crystals coming out of a table where you can look and see people's lives. And you're going, this is the same story. It's over and over again. It's across the thing. And you've got it so that I can do it a lot simpler, where I can just sort of push a button and I can go exactly and find
material. Pull it all up.
You could, in
this model, you could search for that specific correlation with respect to crystals, and it could show you visually and also in text the various different, you know, parts of the schema and the phenomenon. Yeah,
this could be the most important thing I've ever seen come
It'll
down.
It'll pull up all the gypsy crystal stories. It'll pull up every mention of crystal healing. There's so many avenues you can do.
And when people get the realization, oh, that's the same thing, then it's like, oh, what's really going on here? Because people don't realize these connections, that it may all be the same thing. It's this consciousness thing. It's just a different form or vibration, or people have different accesses into it, and it's presenting itself as different phenomena. And
well, you guys, I will say that maybe, just maybe, this is happening now for a reason. because of the report that just came out yesterday.
Oh,
where yeah. It seems like we have 60 some pages that is pretty much hammering the nuts and bolts side of disclosure down so hard that they're going to leave us to explore the phenomenon in this fashion instead of through government disclosure. So when everybody's crying that nobody's going to get up on the podium and announce that, you know, we're not alone, they'll start turning to paradox.com and doing their own research and seeing what the phenomenon really is. So
I really hope so. And I really hope the community sees the value in this concept that is driving me to develop it. It's a lot of work. But I'm really excited to get to the minimum viable product. So I hope by the beginning of next month, April 1st, I hope to have the MVP launched and have the alpha group in. You guys will get invitations to come in and join the back end to test the site, poke around, try to break it, give me some feedback. but also, you know, between now and then, I want to gauge community interest, which is one of the reasons I wanted to connect with you guys, because I see the value, but I wanted to make sure that, you know, I wasn't biased in any way. And that report, you know, I wasn't surprised by that. I feel like the government, all the governments have been gaslighting us all for years and years and years. I mean, that's kind of their MO. So why not continue that? That pattern, you know, I mean,
there is a pattern to it. Yeah. If you pay attention to the versions of what we've had before.
I don't
know. People are upset though. Grant, how are you feeling about that Arrow report? Did it make you mad?
I posted this morning on Twitter and Facebook that I heard a year ago from our friend in Vancouver, that some high level guy that you may know said, we're going to put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's time to put the toothpaste back in the tube. And exactly 1 year later, they put the toothpaste back in the tube. And so that's the problem we've got, is we're singling into nuts and bolts. One little thing, and we've hammered it since 1947, and we've gotten absolutely nowhere. And that's why I said the latest Lakatsky interview is the most important interview, because that's at one point where he says the UAP phenomena is a combination of psychic and physical elements. And when you hear that kind of stuff, you realize that they understand that. But when you see the Biden thing, where Biden says there's national security implications on this, that you can say certain parts, it's this idea that they really, I don't think, know. There's this, all these other components of psychic and these type of elements that they don't know. They've got bodies in the crafts, but they still don't know what's really going on. And they're not going to make that available. Plus, when you get, you know, DIA going to Skinwalker Ranch, they were looking at all these different phenomena, and people don't realize that Bob Bigelow was doing an orb study. They were doing a study on cattle mutilations. They were doing all this sort of stuff, and they realized that there was all these paranormal phenomena, and they're trying to put them all together and see how they connected. So we've gone there, and the UFO community is just so obsessed with almost like entertainment, where we want to get the answer to what's going on, where are the aliens from, and all this kind of stuff, that we've sort of missed the boat as to what's the phenomena actually about. Because what I say is the phenomena is doing it, and you can take your experiences, is when people have a UFO sighting, even your first one, Chase, what was it doing? It wasn't doing anything. It was just sitting there, and it was like, you know, and it drags you in, and it drags you down a road, and then the next thing you know, you're getting all sorts of other phenomena and stuff like that. So I was really not surprised with the government has got the situation sort of under control in terms of national security implications. But I do think that they realize that there's all these other elements that are beyond the nuts and bolts element. And that's something they haven't even begun to talk about yet, except for Lakatsky making that one reference. So you said you had 7 million
reports so far.
This is over all the different type of phenomena.
This is near-death experiences, UFO sightings, UFO reports, alien abduction cases, experiencer reports that span everything that Irwid.org has, all the DMT experiences, all the experiences reported on all of Reddit for the past decade. there's more. So I, you know, part of this initially was how do I, because you can't go out and just copy paste these one by one. So how do I automate that? So I had to teach myself a little bit of Python to automate the scripts. And then I, you know, there's an aspect to this, a legal concern that I'm not, you know, infringing on any copyrights as well. So, you know, there's a fine line that I kind of have to ride there, especially when it comes to inputting books into the large language model and what is provided to users when they search, you know, because you don't want to, obviously don't want to give people free books. So you've got to give them a short snippet. And even then, you know, I want to give most of this database, I want it to be available to the public for free, but it only makes sense to charge some kind of monthly fee for some features so that I can pay database engineers and desk researchers and you know, build the site, continue to build it after it's gone live. So the plan is to provide the majority of the data for free to users with a free account. And then if you want to sign up for a small monthly fee, you can get access to premium features. You know, maybe there's a more advanced individual researcher function. Maybe you have a more advanced collaborative workspace or an academic, you know, premium account or something like that. So all that's been mapped out. I've storyboarded this. If I turn my camera that way, you'd see the site as a storyboard taped all across this wall.
Wow. I can see that the government would be the first people to sign up. Like, I mean, you've done that.
I hope so. Yeah.
Wow. They're just going to be chomping at the bit to see this thing, because that's what they spend all this time. And people don't realize, you know, when you got DIA or CIA, that's how they get it. You're doing their job. It doesn't fall out of the sky. They're getting stories from people. They're putting it, they're doing exactly what you're doing, is correlating this material and trying to find patterns. And that's what Jack Vallée was trying to do. That's what OSAP was trying to do. And you've done a big service to a lot of people, especially to me. I mean, as soon as I'm thinking, I'm like, I do a second or third book on this stuff. It's like, because there was just so much material. And this is just stuff that I had in my head over 50 years that I realized, oh, this story, and then this story would pop in, this story for another, and you put them together and your database, I'll be the first person on it. It's like, wow.
I can't wait to get y'all's feedback. You know, I really can't wait for you guys to jump in and tell me what you think and poke around, you know, and a lot of feedback there from the initial users, you know, is gonna feed into making the platform even more, even better, you know, more robust, adding additional, you know, I went on a small show, a group of guys that I met, it's called, Grant, you actually were, they had you on, or you had them on, Cosmic Convergence, you know, these guys, you remember them?
Yeah.
And they're really nice guys, you know, and some experiencers, but one of the guys said, well, what about a feature where I can track my own experiences? And I said, yeah, actually, that's a part of the storyboarding. I was thinking that it would be similar to, if you guys are familiar with Ancestry.com's backend, you know, it gives you kind of like a family tree, right? This visual representation of a family tree. And so I was thinking there could be an aspect to the site in which you input your own personal experiences and develop your own timeline, and then you can share that with the LLM and the community, or you can keep it private. But the main thing would be for individuals like me, you know, when I had these experiences, I reached out to you, Grant. I reached out to everybody to try and talk about this. And if there had been a website that I could go on and try and develop a timeline with my experiences and then try to correlate those experiences to other people's experiences, that would have helped me so much. I did that manually. That's what we do. But my hope is that that'll also be a feature of Paradox. So that, you know, if you're just an individual and you have experiences, maybe you don't want to share them with people. You know, I was really hesitant initially to go on podcasts and talk about my stuff, because I was working in corporate America and I knew, you know, the majority of those people, it seemed, like if it got out that Chase, you know, was abducted by aliens, or thinks he was, or saw aliens or whatever, like they, you know, I could very well lose my job. So, luckily that's not a concern now, but I know it is for a lot of people. And we saw that with the work that John Mack did in the early 90s when he was going on these talk shows with experiencers, abduction experiencers. And that was kind of the main thing that came out, is they would cry on stage and say, you know, I can't talk to anybody. Family doesn't talk to me anymore. My friends don't talk to me anymore because they think I'm crazy. And I'm not crazy. And we know, I mean, I think we know better now, but
I think that's been one of the most helpful aspects of the UFO Twitterverse right now, is all these X spaces that are being hosted, and you're finding like all these newer people to the community that are finally finding these hosted spaces where they can swap their experiences and kind of talk it out. And everyone I've been involved in that's been on the good side ends up just going for hours and hours, because so many people come to share and try to find other people. So it's needed. It's definitely a needed aspect, and it's still so closeted. I mean, you can find little groups on Facebook or on other social media sites, but honestly, if you can find a local group, like, that's, you know, what it's all about. And I always encourage people, if there's not one close, just start one yourself. You'll be so surprised, even if just two or three people show up to the first one, like, more will come. Just host a meet and greet. Like, that's all it takes.
Yeah, you got to do your part. And when there, you've got the two aspects that you start looking at the experiences, because you had the experience, then that drags you in. It's like they're you're indirectly getting you to do stuff. The same as Jim Semivan complains all the time about the fact that he had the beings in his room and they didn't ask permission and all this kind of stuff. And yet, if he's the guy that went to all the three-letter agencies and said, you guys can't get this out, we're going to force this out. And so if they hadn't abducted him or whatever happened, he never would have done anything. And you've done this also because you've made the other thing, whereas you helped get the memo out and it was read into Congress, and now Congress is pushing the issue, and you see this development that is not the way it was before. Now it's sort of like you can actually talk about it in the halls of Congress and in the Pentagon and stuff, and people aren't going to look, they may look crazy when you get into channeling and stuff like that. But the basic idea, I think we've moved. And so I thank you for the part that you've played a number of times, that people have sort of woken up to the fact that this thing's for real. And when it's time for it to be disclosed, it'll be time for it to be disclosed. But meanwhile, I think it still comes down to me, is that even if this disclosed and says, yeah, it's real, then you got to do something. Then you got to get past that. And that's where your this thing goes, is to answer the questions. Why are we here on Earth? Where are we going? And what the hell are we supposed to be doing when we're here? It's a much bigger question. In terms of just, are they here? It's like Jacques Vallée, even with the Nimitz thing, he said, it's a UFO sighting 15 years ago. It's time to get over it. It's like, let's move on. Let's accept the fact that this is for real and start to figure out what is it and why is it here and what's our role in this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think, and I think it does seem like the broader community is shifting and kind of moving in that direction, that the general sentiment seems to be more open to ufology and, you know, this idea that maybe these things aren't extraterrestrial, maybe they're interdimensional or whatever the case, you know. And then, and it seems like more people are talking about consciousness and the nature of perception and those things. So I really hope so, because I mean, you know, it's like you said, you start to look into this. I remember when I called you, I finally got you on the phone that first time. And I told you about that really significant experience I had. And you said, it's only, you're going to start experiencing more. And I thought, well, what else possibly can happen now? And sure enough, like 2 days later, I had almost the same experience in the front yard instead of the backyard, and a craft flew over my head. And then I think a week after that, there was this, what I would call a poltergeist experience, but I think it was whatever the same entities, because it was Global CE5 Day. I went out in the backyard. I did my own little process. One flew over me, stopped right above my head, but it was way, way up. It was this little pinprick of light, way, way up. And this also happened to be a moment when I had the house to myself. And so I thought, you know what? I've been standing out looking up for months and months now. I'm just going to take a break. I'm going to go inside and read. And I don't think whatever that intelligence was like that, because I went inside, I went into the bedroom, I laid down, right? And I didn't change or anything. I just laid on top of the bed, was going to read a book, closed the bedroom door. And immediately, as soon as I opened the book, there was this massive slam, like somebody had slammed a door, the back door to the house. And this concussion wave of air that came down the hallway to the bedroom, shook the bedroom door. And then I was looking at the bedroom handle, the door handle, and something turned it, didn't open the door, turned the handle. And so I call out because I'm thinking, you know, it's my ex-wife now, it was my wife at the time. I called out to her and she was far away. She was in Houston. And then I thought, oh no, an intruder. And so I go out into the house and I clear the house. Nobody's in the house. And then I realize what happened. There's a dog in the backyard. All the other doors are locked. The dog is not reacting. This was something paranormal. Mm-hmm. And, but anyway, like lots of experiences happened. The most recent experience, I don't know what to make of, like what to make out of. I come outside with the dogs 3 weeks ago. At night to let them go do their business yeah. in the backyard. And this big owl flies out of the backyard. I see its wings. It flies onto a pole that's in my neighbor's backyard looking towards the back. And I can see the silhouette of the owl on this pole. And it's a massive owl. And I'm thinking the smallest dog we have is about 30 pounds, but this owl is so big, I'm thinking he might try to pick this dog up. So I'm concerned about getting the dogs inside. So I get the little one inside, the big one refuses to go inside. So I have to put the little one in. I come back out, I'm looking at this owl. I don't break contact with my gaze towards this at the silhouette of the owl. It just disappears. It just disappears. It's gone. It didn't fly away. It's just gone. And I say out loud, what the F? Like, where did it go? And I'm looking at it. It's gone. What do you do with that? Right? What am I supposed to do with that?
Well, I'll tell you, if you heard the Mike Clellan, I told it at the MUFON conference. I told that story. And then Mike went and told it. He said, you're my spokesman now. And he his thing was he's the owl guy, right? So he has he has the abduction experience. He thinks it's an abduction experience in Utah. He's sleeping outside of a road. And so Yvonne Smith regresses him. And he says, well, when I'm under, and he asked me why I'm so obsessed with owls. And then she says, yeah, okay. So then they're doing this thing and he's up above the craft. He gets pulled out of the sleeping bag. He's out of his body. He's above the craft. And they go in and the beings are behind this table. He said it looks like a hotel room in Indiana with dirty carpet and a card table type thing, real cheap table and stuff. And you can't see their faces. And these beings are going, it's time. And he's going, what do you mean? What's time? Time for what? Time to do what? And they said, the time, it's time. And then suddenly he realizes this reflection, the fact that he volunteered for this. And then he gets all upset and he's swearing, F this, F that. You didn't tell me it was going to be this hard and all this sort of stuff. And then he said, it's like they picked up like a pin. They sort of picked him with this pin and all this energy went down. And then he's just sitting, he realizes, that they're right, that this is real. And then Yvonne takes the opportunity, just, so Mike, what's the story with the owls? Why are you so obsessed with owls? And he starts channeling. And again, you see this connection. It's one thing after another. He's out of body. It's an alien abduction. He's channeling. And he says, the owls don't mean anything. The owls are not important. The owls are just a symbol. The owls are a symbol that you put on a door. It's the door that's important. When you go to the door, you open the door and you see the owl on the door and you go, why is that owl doing on the door? And you open the door and on the other side of the door is this vast unexplored universe. And that's what they're doing. They're moving us from one bizarre experience to another. And it's curiosity. It's almost like the idea that awe and curiosity are what drive science. If you're not curious, you're not going to do any experiment. Or they asked the theologian, it was in a seance, they asked, I've even got it, I wrote it down here. Hang on, I'll read it to you. They asked Martin Luther in 1850, it was in a seance type thing. They asked him, why does God not reveal himself? And he says, because doubt is the instrument which forges the human spirit. If the soul were if the day were to come when the soul and spirit no longer doubted, the human spirit would fly off and leave the body behind. And that's the whole thing. It's that curiosity. That's what they're driving us. That's the whole phenomenon. And that's the owl. When you mentioned the owl, that's exactly what Mike Collins said. You know, it doesn't mean anything. It's just a symbol. Or, you know, what's his name? Barbara Streisand's stepson. When he told the story, and when he had the experience with the thing above the thing, and he would tell his wife, he's talking to me on the phone in his car and stuff, and all these bizarre experiences and orbs flying around the house and stuff like that.
His owl was in the bathroom, like
the bathroom, and then he said,
in a little bathroom, so it's like,
and his wife says it's 5 feet tall, and I said, 5 feet? Are you sure it was 5 feet? If not 4 feet, because Mike Collins talks about 4 feet. He said, no, it was 5 feet. I went in there, it was 5 feet tall. I was sitting on the counter in the bathroom. And he went to get the phone, he went to get the camera, and of course then it disappears. And that's the whole thing. They get your attention, it's almost like Skinwalker Ranch. You get the cameras all set up, and then it rips the cameras down. It doesn't, it won't allow itself to be filmed. It's just the curiosity thing. It's just driving you, and you become obsessed, and suddenly that's all you can think about.
And that's why I kind of, it is the curiosity thing. And I kind of call it, and it's almost when I have still doubts going on, I'm curious, but I doubt. And it does come up like that. And I think this is related almost to that hitchhiker effect that people talk about, or, you know, us getting together and then exploring this more. Because with the apports, that was around when I had first started to smash the UFO stuff and with the other paranormal side. And I was listening to all your report stories, the one with the feathers. And I was like, bullshit. This ain't happening. I'm listening to this at work where I had had some of my own experiences. And yeah, I'm like, oh, what's great, dude? Oh, I don't get this. And then I start, like, I'm listening to this and I'm pulling stuff out of my chef coat and there's a feather. And then I'm pulling them out of my other pockets and there's more feathers. And I'm like, I'm like, oh, this ain't right. And then it was with my big sighting. And, you know, running all over the county with multiple people saying they're seeing this thing. And then I get home and I have my report sitting on my kit on my dining room table. And I'm like, I can't deny this anymore. Like, all right, thanks for the woo slap, you know. And
got your attention.
Oh, my God. Well, even when we interviewed Mike about the owls and all this, this always comes up. It's like, damn it. And I have owls too. The ones that hoot outside, you can't find them. I had one at, I had this beautiful like lofted apartment on a city street. I used to have this owl that would fly down and then just like disappear in the middle of the night, like fly down Main Street. And then I had a missing time scenario where me and my boyfriend were going to a haunted house of all these places. And I'm terrified. I'm like, I hate haunted houses. I don't want to go. Well, we got lost out in the country. And the last thing we remembered before we got lost is we hit an owl. Like this
owl
was just in the middle, like right in front of our headlights in slow motion. And he really freaked out. He was kind of a Native American. And if you hit, you know, these creatures or injure them, you know, it's a bad sign. We flew out of this truck going to find this owl and it wasn't there. And it was like we had an hour and a half of missing time after that. We never got to the haunted house. Like we gave up and went home. So that comes up too. And it's just so freaky, but it makes you keep exploring this. Like, what the heck happened? Like
now it's easier. Now Mike Clellan just is going to be coming to you and going to your database because he's got filing cabinets full of owl stories. He's been collecting them for years.
I think I probably have shared these with Mike, but it's like you said, he has so many. It's like, how many more does he really need? Like, well, I don't know.
He'll go to the database. I guarantee he'll be one of the first people in the database trying to, get, because that's the whole thing is fascinating research. I mean, it's about time someone did this. It's this interdisciplinary thing that has totally been missing. And you can't blame people because it doesn't really fall in anybody's sort of job jar. It's not like the agriculture department's going to look at UFOs or the U.S. Air Force used to say, well, it's not a threat to national security. We're just pilots dropping bombs and stuff. It's not our job. And it's not anybody's job. That's where you've sort of created a field where it's sort of a, somebody's got responsibility for it because people used to say like astronomy and it's like, oh, you got to have an astronomer. And it's like, well, what the hell does an astronomer know about UFOs? You know about stars and the ages of stars and colors and stuff. You know nothing about UFOs. And that's the whole thing. It really does. It's never really fallen into anybody's specialty. because it's
well, it's definitely definitely my job now. I'm all focused on the design of this database and the integration of the information, and you know, and all the way out. I mean, you know, the project plan here is to, like I said, launch the MVP, want to gauge community interest, get people signed up, notify people of project updates, invite the first group into the alpha and the beta tests of the website, and then launch it to the public. And then really, you know, again, hire dedicated desk researchers alongside myself to go through all this information and put it in. And it's, you know, that in and of itself, you know, I mentioned earlier, you asked me again, over 7 million reports collected so far. I know that when I open the gates, when this first launches, it's going to be the largest database available to the public anyway, in the world for sure. Unless something exists out there that I'm unaware of, you know, and it's only going to get bigger, you know. So, you know, I'm really excited. I really hope that the community sees the value that I do. And it's my job now. That's what I do.
Well, I'll volunteer. I can be your intern if you need, Chase.
I'm ready, Nicole. Absolutely.
give us your contact if people want to got some ideas or want to help or you know, want to come in at the beginning. Like, well, what's your contact information for the site is not up yet, but for yourself.
It is. It is.
So the input with you.
The landing page is up. So if you go to discoverparadox.com, and I put it in the Facebook chat a couple of times, but I'll put it in there again. If you visit discoverparadox.com, you can contact me through the website. There's a contact us button at the bottom. You can also email me directly at chase@paradoxproject.com. I know it's confusing. I have two different URLs, but I can be contacted there. You can also email me at williamschaseh@gmail.com. That's fine as well. I would really love to connect with more individuals that have an interest in the project, that maybe think that they could contribute to the project in some way. It's been a lot of head down for me because I'm doing a lot of this myself. So the storyboarding, the website design, the UI design, the database integration is a big part of this. And then taking all that data, and all that data has to be formatted for the database, right? You think about the kind of information you get from a database, you know, an Excel spreadsheet that has 1,000 Bigfoot sightings in it, right? The variables that are on that spreadsheet are not going to be the same variables that you would get from New Fork and their spreadsheets. So you have to normalize everything and standardize it to put it in. So that's a lot of work too. The main thing now is just reaching out. Discoverparadox.com is the website. Sign up for updates. If you want to get in contact with me, the contact form is there at the bottom. That would be the best way. You know, you can email me at chase@paradoxproject.com.
Beautiful. Is there any questions on Facebook that you guys can see that people are?
Let me put that in. So it's chase@paradoxproject. Is it Paradox? Let me just put the other one here. So this is discoverparadox.com. That's the website. And then
it's DOX or DOC.
DOCS. Okay. Yeah. Like documents. Yeah. And Project Paradox. That's my email address. You guys can also email me here too.
And if anybody wants to get a hold of Chase through me or Grant, we could help that too.
First thing I'm going to do when I get off, I'm going to send you the book. I think you'll be kind of.
I'm excited. Yeah, that's wild.
Exactly what you're doing. Well,
it can be the first book fully uploaded.
The Shoemaker version without the database. I mean, if I'd known this database existed, that would save me some work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is how timelessness operates, though, you know, just everything happens when it needs to happen for the reason. It's like I said, government disclosure just got blown up. So now we need the real phenomenon.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think people will be surprised if once they realize this connection, they'll realize, as I always say, this thing is 1,000 times more complex than what you think it is. It's coming in from different angles, and it leaves you in awe of what is possible and what's actually going on. Some of the stories that you hear are just, and people don't hear the stories because they're in their own little box. They just figure their little religious viewpoint or scientific viewpoint is going to solve all the answers. And they're basically, I don't think there are many answers. It just gets more complex and more complex. And we're being led along, which I think is with you. They're leading you along with these bizarre little experiences. And, you know, when you decide you're not going to do it anymore, you're just going to, read a book, then it's like, let's get his attention again. That's what happened to Chris Bledsoe when he met the lady. He had gone out and he said, "That's it. I've had it. Leave me alone. I don't want to do this anymore." It's
like, it worked out too well. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. And I don't know. People call those synchronicities or, you know, following your inspiration. Like we don't really have the right lingo for it, but that's what your paradox is going to help us with too, is sorting out all the different ways people describe this phenomenon, you know. And that's important because, you know, a biologist and a chemist is going to describe the phenomenon differently than a farmer and a cook.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or somebody with their religious background or this religious background, like they are going to describe things differently. So this will help us levelize that playing field there. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, I am too. Let me ask one last question for your own personal, you've sort of looked at all this stuff. Now you've had all these experiences. If you were to sort of ballpark, what the hell's going on? What do you think's going on?
I think, I think it's an overgeneralization. I've said before, we create reality. I know that's kind of cliche now in the community, but I think it's overly generalized, but I think there's a lot of truth there. I think that it is all about consciousness. That consciousness is fundamental, that space-time is derived from some kind of field of consciousness. And I think there's a lot of truth in what we see in, you know, religious teachings like Buddhism about, you know, there not really being separation. Some of these induced experiences that I've had that I've shared with you guys in the past have really kind of solidified or increased my confidence in thinking that that those things are really true, that we do shift from experience to experience, and everything is happening in the present moment, that time is linear, appears to be linear from the human perspective or from, you know, the animals and other conscious entities on the planet in this kind of experience, but it's not always linear, which is why you have so many near-death experiencers that have the life review, that go back and have every thought, every experience, every emotion that they've ever had.
And then connect to everybody else. Everybody else.
Right.
And that's the thing of complexity. When you realize that kind of complexity is going on, that it's not just your experiences, but you see other third person's feelings and stuff like this is all linked together. You go like, wow.
Geez. Yeah. Yeah. The integration with, you know, NHIs in that regard. I mean, I think it's a multifaceted kind of thing. Like you said, this thing is way more complicated than most people believe it to be. I think, and, you know, it's not one or the other, it's both, you know, in a lot of cases. I think it's both. I think some of the NHIs are in the same kind of having a similar kind of experience to what we're having, and they're visiting Earth, and they know more about the nature of consciousness. So there's some aspects to some of the interactions that we have there. On the other hand, maybe there are non-corporeal, non-physical entities that exist at higher planes of awareness. You know, when we start thinking about this from the holographic universe and Talbot's perspective, I think there's truth to all that. You know, it's just so multifaceted. You know, and you can get lost. I mean, you can get lost in just the apport research forever. You could spend forever on that, right? Yeah. So yeah, I'm that's kind of where I am, Grant. Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm glad you're doing it because you got a technical background. You're a guy who's accomplished. You don't need this. You've done your own thing in your life and achieved a bunch of stuff. So that's what people will look up to you and say, well, this guy ain't stupid. I mean, he's got this all together. And so I appreciate you, especially stepping out from a position you're in to get into this thing and take the chance that this may harm your career. So thank you for what you've done.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really passionate about this. So, you know, this is what I want to focus my time and my energy on. And I want to bring value to the community because I know there are other people like us that have had experiences that may not be having conversations like this that need more resources. And so I really do hope that this is valuable to the community. And I appreciate both of you and thanks again for having me on.
Yeah.
Anytime, Chase. Thanks you. Thanks.
And then thank you to the for the experiences, the phenomena, because as I said about Jim Semivan, if they hadn't given you the experiences, he wouldn't be doing this. Same as Jim Semivan wouldn't be out trying to get disclosure.
Right.
We gotta
I'll send you some invites to some of these Twitter conversation and spaces.
Oh yeah.
I think you might.
Well, we should maybe have one of these conversation with Chase where people can log in. I mean, we had 1,800 people or something for that one. It was like,
I did one with, I've done several with a couple of people like Joe Merja and Eric Mitchell, and I ended up talking in one that was hosted for him. And yeah, they end up going way longer than you ever anticipate.
Set up one for Chase. Once we get this,
I'd love that.
Thing, yeah. Chase goes public then. Because these people, everybody can ask questions and stuff like that. And I was surprised how many people, it's almost like the new world. It's like, you know, people aren't reading books anymore. You know, they're not even really doing Twitter anymore. They're into these spaces. And I go, and then when I got the person to call invite, I go, spaces, what the hell is that? And it's like, I didn't even know these things exist. And all these people are on there. And you got to go where you can't fight, you know, take the kids to get their cell phones away. You got to live with what's happening. This is the world. This is the cards you're being dealt, and you gotta work with where people are at and where they're talking so I would love to do one of these spaces things.
We'll Grant, everybody wants you to do more too. That's what I'm hearing. They're like, get Grant back on. Like, so we'll do some more. And yeah, Chase, we'll include you in some too. We'll kick something up. But
I love that. I miss you guys too. We used to talk more frequently. So it doesn't have to be about Paradox, but if that's a part of the conversation, then that's great too. But I would enjoy.
I'm your new intern now, so we'll talk.
Great. All right. All right.
And I'll send you the book. I think you'll be kind of excited to see it. Okay.
I'm really looking forward to that, Grant. Thanks so much, guys.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye, everybody. All right. Thanks for tuning in on Facebook.
Yes.
Bye, guys. Do it again. Thanks so much for having me again.
Okay, talk soon. Namaste.
Namaste.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.